Welcome to Puentes, Bridges to the Community. Hello, I'm your host, Emily Guerra. My guest on this edition is the artistic producer and founder of the Court Youth Center and Alma de Arte Charter High School, Irene Oliver Lewis. She resides in the Las Cruces Historic Mesquite District, where she was raised, one of five children. Thank you for joining me today, Irene.
Oh, Emily, you know it's always a pleasure to be here with you. I just love sharing just memories and dreams and visions with you. So it's really an honor.
Talking about memories and dreams, and how were most of your childhood days spent?
Oh gosh, with great love and joy in our neighborhood, in the Mesquite neighborhood, the original town site. And all the kids, everybody knew each other. And so we spent a lot of time outside when my sister and I were talking about this just recently. And we, you know, so many kids, they're in their rooms now. They have their electronics and they have all these things and they have this little room. And we were always outside and we were playing. We were never bored. And we didn't have a lot of toys. We didn't have a lot of things. We just played with each other. We played with nature. We would make mud pies and we would get the bird of paradise, the flowers to be on our cakes, or we would play with the animals that were around, or we just talk with each other in the neighborhood. So it was really a wonderful time. And then so many people don't know that part of town, when I was young in the 50s, it was not paved. And so we were on the plain. So over here, all the arroyos, all the Tell Shore, all the Sonoma Ranch, all that was arroyos. So the arroyo, when it would rain, they would come down and they'd come to town. And we were in the flood area. We loved it because it was a swimming pool. So we would have an outdoor swimming pool in our front lawns for like 2 days. So we loved it when it would rain. So I have a lot of memories of our neighborhood.
So that inspired your creativity and your artistic endeavors then?
Well, I think my grandmother did, and I think my father and my mother did. My grandmother was Trivis from Doñana, the Trivis family, and all the Trivis family, there was just a culture in that household and all the sisters, and she went to the Loreto Academy that was not here anymore, but she was there as a child, and she learned all the traditions. Traditional things that women did, but she loved music and she was a good musician and she loved to crochet and she loved to read. And so there was something about my grandmother, my mother's mother, Anengo, that from that side of the family. And then my dad, we didn't realize he was such a visual artist and such a folk artist, really, with his hands and how he would make things. And I mean, he was recycling before he got a name, and he would make little boxes for us, and he would make he would carve things for us, and so I never knew that he was trained during the WPA as one of the five, they were called five mesieros, that were trained in the traditional Spanish style furniture, and they were in the Fritz right there in the corner, the Thunderbird in Mesilla. They were trained in that building, and so Dad knew how to do all these carvings, and we did not know until I was in my 40s that Dad had done this. So he was always good in building in his house, but my mother was the performer. My mother would sing, and she loved mariachi music, and we would go to Juarez on the weekends, we thought, to go shopping, you know, at the Mercado. Everybody did that at the time, but really it was to go to the Manhattan for her to sing live with the mariachis all the time. And so that sense of drama, that sense of storytelling, she was an incredible storyteller. She could switch. She would have the intonation when she would tell stories. She'd have intonation of the people that when she would repeat things. She was just great. So that I got from my mother. So it was this whole mixture of texture and sound and vision and color and all of that. I did not know that it was festering inside of me and growing inside of me until high school, when they discovered I had a talent in theater.
So then all of that talent that led you to going and getting your bachelor's in journalism, double bachelor's then in theater from New Mexico State University. And tell me about your master's.
And my master's was in something that was called Reader's Theater, which is adapted adapting literature for performance. And at that particular time, Isabel Crouch, who one of the buildings and now at NMSU is named after Isabel, led a whole Reader's Theater oral and terp department. And so she knew of my talent, and so she invited me to get involved as an undergraduate. We would travel all over the United States to these oral and terp festivals, and we would produce these pieces of Isabel. She was really one of the high-powered people in that field at that time, and so she taught me a lot. And she and Edgar Garrett, who was the head of the speech department, I went away after I got my undergraduate degree and went to Albuquerque and did some journalism work in Albuquerque, but they brought me back to do my master's. And I got my master's in Reader's Theater, and I adapted the literature of New Mexico. So it was called The Rain Will Come, and we did it at the Herschel Zone Theater. And then we did it for the community theater when it was at the Fountain Theater. So it brought in the culture of the writers at the time, Keith Wilson, John Nichols, Rudolfo Anaya, all of these people. So at that time, I didn't know these, and I had to get permission to use their literature. Fray Angelico Chavez. So I was looking through some of my memorabilia. I have handwritten notes from all of them, you know, saying, of course you can adapt our literature. So it was this thing about New Mexico, and it was kind of a nostalgic or kind of an idealistic endeavor, a piece of literature that looked at the three cultures and how we come together. There were some Native American chants, and that's where the story comes from, the title, The Rain Will Come, actually came from a woman named Peggy Pond Church, who wrote about Los Alamos, and she lived next to the San Ildefonso Pueblo, and she became very close to them. And there's a belief the rain will come. So when you have rain in an event that you didn't expect rain, it's good luck. And you just believe. So now I think we need to seriously go back and collectively believe that the rain will come.
Would you say that this was part of your emergence into Latino art?
Well, the Latino art, it came about through Isabel Crouch, actually. We were going to Missouri, and she says, Irene, we've been invited to present. Do you have anything that you could do that is of New Mexico? And so Sabina Ulavari had a short story called, I can't even remember the name of the short story, but in it, it's a magical realism story. It's about a man who fell in love with a bee, the queen bee. And it's just this great little story about this little man who lives into town and how the bees would never come to him or they would always come to him. And so anyway, it's this crazy little story that I adapted. And what I did was I put it in Spanish. So I put some areas, some of the literature, because it was in Spanish and English as he wrote it. And the reaction to the audience was amazing. Something as simple as estaba caminando, or adios, or I would say a few words. And the reaction was amazing. It was the first time that showed me what I could do with my culture. And then from then on, I was doing Shakespeare, I was doing Brecht, I was doing all world literature, but I wasn't doing New Mexican literature. So I started doing the writing of people and adapting it to literature, like Rudolfo Anaya and Bless Me Ultima had just come out. And so I adapted things to that, or if I'm poetry of people that spoke to me. And it wasn't until Luis Valdez was here with Teatro Campesino and he had his plays, he came with the actos, and I saw him here at Milton Hall, is now where the Creative Media Institute is. He performed, that's where we had a theater over here anyway, so it was here at Milton Hall, and I saw Luis Valdez, and all of a sudden it was my culture on stage, and I said, this is what I want to do, this is what my voice is. All of a sudden, I found my voice. So that's what started it. And then when I got hired to, was ready to leave Las Cruces, I knew I couldn't make a living in the arts or in theater in Las Cruces. And although I'd done lots of stuff, I went to Albuquerque and they hired me a brand new theater company. I had just started. started repertory on bilingual theater, and it's called La Compañía de Teatro, and they hired me to come and direct a new show, their winter show, because their artistic director was touring in Latin America. And so I went, and my cousin, actually, Denise Chavez, is the one that said, you ought to hire my cousin to come and direct the show. So we did a brand new play. She wrote a play called Si Hay Posada. And so we collaborated on that, and it was really like it represented our families, you know, where you always have Christmas, or mostly a Christmas. It was so, you know, where you have all the craziness of families, and we had all these types of Latino people. So you'd have the grandmother that only spoke in Spanish, or you'd have the kid that went off to Harvard or to Yale and couldn't relate to his culture because he was Ivy League now, and he came back with his gringa girlfriend and things like that. And then you'd have the traditional families, and then we interspersed it with political nature of a reenactment of one of the characters was had post-traumatic stress from Vietnam, and he went into a dream sequence of Vietnam with all these characters. And that started my association with La Compañía de Teatro and with Latino theater. And with the company, what we would do is we would do traditional literature of Spain or of Mexico that would be totally in Spanish, or we then started the adaptation of contemporary Latino issues. And so we would write original scripts, or we would look at, for instance, we did Macbeth, but we placed Macbeth during the time of Nicaragua and what was happening with the Sandinistas. And so here you had them in fatigues and, you know, and all this sort of stuff, making a statement that war and these issues of Macbeth were still around. And then we would, in that particular case, we would just use the words of Shakespeare, but the look of it was Latin America. Or we would take Arthur Miller's View from the Bridge and placed it in one of the areas, the Hispanic areas, and the South Valley in Albuquerque. So I gained a lot of my training in what is Latino theater at that particular time. And then we were very lucky because we were picked. Then I became the artistic director, and we were picked to go to Joseph Papp's Festival Latino at the Public Theater in New York City. And what he would do is for 2 months in the summer, he brought in all these Latin American companies from Colombia and from Puerto Rico and Nicaragua, and everybody would come to and would perform. You'd perform on the public. You'd have a 2-week stint that you would do your play, and then it was in repertoire all these other plays, and we would collect together. And so at that time, it was the beginning of Chicano theater, and so we were considered, we were the only ones that particular year to represent the United States at Festival Latino. And so we went with this gentle little play called Plaza that represented the people of New Mexico. And it was, again, it was looking at the strength of our hundreds of years of a Hispanic, Latino, whatever you want to call, culture in New Mexico. And it had, all these different characters. And it was set in a plaza that was like Santa Fe, but it was really this center place that we have in all our Latino communities and in New Mexico, the center of town. And then all the characters that meet. And so it was very well acted, very well received. But at the same time, we were also invited to go perform at the Edinburgh.
What year was this?
This was in 1984. And we were invited to go perform at the Edinburgh International Festival in the Fringe, what they call the Fringe, in a really prestigious theater company called the Theater Workshop. And so we took the same play there, and we were in at the Fringe. We were there for 3 weeks and played those 3 weeks at this theater. And we were a hit because, unbeknownst to us, they are in Scotland, they have Gaelic. And they were bringing back Gaelic in the schools as part of their cultural background. And even though they did not understand what the little viejito was saying, because he talked totally in Spanish, they understand the sense of fighting a bilingual, of going back to the culture of bilingual. And it was such an incredible thing to see in New York, where all the other companies were looking at political things of being displaced and all the issues, even when you had, like you had Medium Cologne and the Puerto Rican traveling company, they were people who were living in the United States, but displaced from their original countries. We were not. We were looking at, we've been here 400 years, but we're still looking at how do you maintain your language? How do you maintain your culture? How do you do it? So we were very different type of social consciousness of looking at art. And so my work has always been in Latino work, has been looking at what are you as a cultural being in that particular culture that you come from. And I love mixing all these multicultural type of understandings. When you truly bring in multiculturalism, you value the differences of all the different cultures. So although I would concentrate on Latino theater, my work in the schools or my work in the community was bringing in all cultures so that you had Native Americans flourishing, you had Vietnamese flourishing, you had women flourishing, and asking themselves, so if I'm looking at my culture through my art, what do I do? And that goes from contemporary issues to traditional issues. So our muralists, you know, I did a collaboration with UNM and we did Romeo and Juliet, but we set it in 1968 at Highlands University at the beginning of the Chicano movement. And when all these muralists painted the walls at Highlands and there was a huge uproar and they destroyed the murals, well, those muralists happened to be my friends. And so they repainted the set of Romeo and Juliet with all these murals that they had originally done in 1967. And so it was just a statements. And so to me, Latino artists are, is looking at your culture through your art, and you're making a definition, you're questioning, you're emerging. So all those different things come into play when you look at your art through your culture.
So is it art about Latinos, or is it called Latino art because you're a Latina? Can you define it?
There's a lot of stuff written about it, and there's a lot of controversy, and some people want to say, I'm an artist, I'm not a Latino artist. I'm an artist, I'm not a female artist. So there are different beliefs, and I feel that all of it is okay as long as you're true to your art. My art didn't find a focus going back to when I was here at NMSU until my voice, my Hispanic New Mexican voice, came through the writings of this man, Savin Ulavarri, who later on became a friend. You know, in his work, I did other pieces of his work when I went to Albuquerque. To me, that defined my art. What I did through La Compañía was making a public aware of our sound through music, our sound through language, our colors through art, our movement through texture of costuming, of both what's been passed down from us, what was done in colcha stitchery, what was done in the music. Cipriano was just on your show. I became immersed because up north, it is all around us. And here in southern New Mexico, it wasn't. I think it still isn't. And so when I retire in a year, I want to go back to helping artists around in this area to find themselves into what you're doing. I do it now with youth. There is a culture of youth culture, and their illegal shows of graffiti and hip hop, that's a youth culture. It speaks to them in a certain way that may not speak to somebody else, but they understand it. So to me, I am a Hispanic. I grew up with a bilingual home, Spanish and English, the images of color, the images of sound. I cannot move away from that. And everything that I produce or create always goes back to that. There's some periods in my life as an artist where it was stronger, and I produce the art. Coming back home, I really produced institutions. I produced Alma de Arte. I produced Court Youth Center. And through that, things came. Even through Court Youth Center, initially, I did Dia de los Muertos. You know, it was part of what we did all year. I would do things at Christmas that had to do with the Guadalupe. In April, I embraced this thing called Dia de los Niños, which is highlighting Latino children's literature. So all of my themes were of that, but I knew it had to open up to a general community. So, and my own art is my own piece that I do about my family. My mom and my dad is called Cecilia Isabel. Catechism's Dichos de mi Madre. And each story has a dicho in it, and what the sentiment of that is, and what the sound of that is, and the meaning of that. So you cannot separate me from my culture and who I am in my art.
Being a Latina artist, how do you maintain the culture and identity? Now, we're going to have a second part to this as well, but why don't we just wrap this part up and talk about that? And how do you maintain your culture and identity? How do you see that going forward?
I think you never go away from it. It's when you part yourself from your upbringing and who you are as a cultural being that you stop the creation. And I have been very fortunate in that I was able to be introduced to so many artists, Latino artists, that showed me the power of your being, the power of who you are as a Latino. I also, if you're Native American, if you're African American, I exchanged with so many different people, but they all brought in their own culture, and they, in a sense, were my mentors to understand. And then I just diversified and trusted myself, trusted my own soul, and trusted my background.
Well, we've just listened to artistic producer and founder of the Court Youth Center and Alma de Arte Charter High School, Irene Oliver Lewis. And we're going to be listening to part two next week. Thank you for joining us on Puentes, Irene.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. For KRWG, I'm Emily Guerra.